How's it going, everyone? Thank you so much for working the podcast into your life, wherever you listen. Apple, Spotify, Amazon. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. As always, trying to bring you on over to GoLongTD.com. Hopefully, a lot of listeners caught our profile on Trent Sherfield a couple weeks ago ahead of free agency. Had the opportunity to chat with the wide receiver for a story, and he was unbelievable, really opened up on his experiences with Arizona, San Francisco, Miami, really taking it back further than that to his roots growing up about a few hours south of Chicago. Just incredible story. And, you know, with him signing with those Buffalo Bills right here in the backyard, I thought it'd be a good idea to include the full conversation here on the podcast. So if you want to hear Trent Sherfield for yourself, here he is. I think the Bills are getting, of course, a hell of a receiver, somebody who blocks, who makes the tough catches across the middle, but just an unreal worker from high school. You know, he got his chance just from a cold DM to a 7-on-7 coach, and that really opened up the door. Gets to Vanderbilt, busts his ass there, undrafted, and as he explains, earned the job, earned starting jobs with Arizona and San Francisco, and politics got in the way. I mean, he's kind of been screwed over through his career. Finally got a shot with Miami with a coach who believes in him, and it worked out. And now he's in Buffalo with a chance to be a part of an offense that can put up a lot of points. Let's face it, an offense that should have its pedal to the metal in 2023. They've got to really kind of lean in to being the juggernaut that they've been at times. So I think Trent Sherfield has a role in the locker room, on the field, and the fans are really going to love this guy. So here's the conversation. Hope you enjoy. Be sure to share the podcast with a friend, rate, review, and above all, we'd love it if you subscribe to GoLongTD.com monthly, annual. Would love it if you joined our community today. Alrighty, enjoy Trent Sherfield, everyone.
I'll take you all the way back. I mean, I started playing football at the age of 5. You know, literally youth peewee football. My uncles played a lot. My uncles played sports, so that's kind of where I got. That's kind of where I gravitated towards. You know, playing sports because my uncles were really heavy into sports. My uncles they went and played division. They went and played collegiate basketball and collegiate baseball. And, you know, it was something that I knew that I wanted to do, just seeing them, being able to see, getting college letters and all those things to the house. And it just, you know, seeing those letters really kind of motivated me to, you know, want to, you know, go and do it. And so when I was around my uncles at a very young age, they were always around. But when they went to college, they obviously were only coming back for, you know, Christmas break and Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So it was kind of like, dang, well, this is what I'm supposed to do too, you know, seeing them, you know. So, you know, I kind of just took it, you know, going, you know, obviously still playing football all the way through, you know, high school and everything like that. You know, where I'm from, you know, a lot of it's not like it's a rural town. And so a lot of colleges are not coming through to, you know, watch guys play, you know. And so what I had to do was my mom would actually drive me from because I'm 2 hours south of Chicago. And so my mom would drive me to Chicago to go and do and compete in 7-on-7 tournaments and, you know, compete with the best of the best in Chicago. So then that way I started to get, you know, recognition and things like that. And so that's kind of where I gained my recognition from, was, you know, being on one of the top 7-on-7 teams in Illinois at the time. And, you know, so I drew the interest from there. And then obviously, you know, the high school tape and everything like that, going to camps and all those different things, hitting the camp circuit. So I really had to hit it hard. Like I didn't have the luxury of just playing, you know, high school ball and you know, college coaches coming to watch me play, like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, it was, it wasn't, it just it's never been heard of. And so, you know, I'll never forget James, because I committed to Vanderbilt. I'll never forget James Franklin pulled up to my high school, and it was so dope because, like, you know, a lot of the and it was like a it was a really cool feeling, because not just because it was for me, but I think it kind of gave everybody around me that was on my team hope that, you know, man, like college coaches can come and you know watch us play. Now, granted, he didn't come watch me play. It was kind of more of a, he we were doing a walkthrough at that time, and he had came and he, you know, he watched and talked to the coaches and stuff like that. And so it was really, really cool, man. And you know, neither here nor there. You know, had to go to Chicago and, you know, compete with the best of the best. And I'll tell you a quick story, bro. The reason I even got on the 707 team was because I actually had cold DM'd Paul Chesney. I don't know how to spell his last name, but Paul Chesney, he was the you can just call him Paul, but Paul was the he was the head coach of the 707 team. It was called Core Six Athletes. And I cold DM'd him, and I was just like, man, you know, how can I, you know, try out for the team? You know, I want to be a part or whatever it may be. And he got back to me, and he was like, you know, we're going to Ohio State, you know, for a camp, and you know, I, you know, you can come or whatever. And I was like, okay, how am I going to get to Chicago? Nobody was able. No, my mom was working at the time. I think my grandmother was working at the time, and nobody was able to take me to Chicago. And so I ended up hitting up one of my kind of like my mentors, Denver Brigham, who actually drove me to a Taco Bell. So they actually met me. I can't remember where exactly where it was, but the Core Six team, they met me at a local Taco Bell, got in the van, drove down to Ohio State, and that's kind of where like I made my mark, you know, like I think it was kind of like my tryout, you know, for the team. And it was like the first time me being in like a collegiate stadium, you know, competing and going up against the best of the best. And it was like, bro, like, this is what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of opened my eyes. Like, man, like I gotta go to school for playing ball. You know, like I knew before that I wanted to do it, but when I did that, it was like, okay, this is real. Like, this is something that I really want to do. And so, and the cool thing about it was too, it was kind of like a I think it was like a Saturday, Friday, or Saturday night, like under the lights type of camp. So it was dope, bro. We were in the stadium, like it was dark outside, lights was on. We were doing one-on-ones and, you know, all the stuff that you normally do. And man, when I came back home, it was just like I had got like a breath of fresh air, bro. And it was just like, man, like my whole world had just like opened up. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, man, like I can really do this. And so I always knew I wanted to play in the league. But I always knew that like collegiate wise, like it was something that I, you know, that I had to do first. And so for me, like me going to college was like a huge step in its own. You know, because how hard it is to go to, you know, get a scholarship and, you know, come from where I come from and be able to go do that. That was a, you know, big accomplishment in itself. But you know, even when growing up, you know, I would get college letters, bro, and I would literally just pin them like around my room. Like I just would just, yeah, like just pin them all around my room. And like my whole room was just had just letters from all type of schools, you know, even if they weren't interested, you know what I'm saying? Like, but it was just me waking up every single day and seeing all those letters. It was like, okay, this is, you know, it's just kind of like that reoccurring, you know, that reoccurring just thought, like, okay, like this is what we're going to get. This is what we're working
Even if
for,
it
you know.
wasn't an offer, just that it could have been a
Even if it
random
wasn't an
letter.
offer, even if it wasn't an offer, like I pinned them so much on my wall that it got to the point where I ran out of room, you know, on my wall. And I kept this binder of, well, not a binder, but like a crate full of letters underneath my bed. And I would always just go in and just kind of just dig through it. But it was just so like, I don't know, bro. Like it, for me, it was like, man, like I'm really getting college letters, because I always see my uncles get those college letters.
Yes, sir. You
And
ripped the Illinois baseball
yeah,
one open.
I ripped my uncle's, I ripped it open, because I'm like, hold on, like They
You're
were
like middle
beautiful.
school. Like, what
Yeah, I
is
was just in
this?
middle school. Yeah, I was just in middle school, and I seen the University of Illinois, and I seen it was for, I seen it was for my uncle, and I opened it. I'm like, man, like, it kind of, how it always says, like, hey, we're interested in, you playing for us and whatever it may be. And I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool. Like, I had some recollection of what, obviously, what it meant to go, go play Division I sports. So, like, that's why I opened it. And so I'm like, man, dang, like, he's really like getting, interest from schools. And so when I got my first one, it was from Iowa State, bro. I got my first letter from Iowa State. My mom gave it to me, bro. And when I seen it, I literally ran down the street, like, with just so much excitement, because it was like, okay, this is starting. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are starting to notice that I can play, and all those different things. And so, but yeah, I will always keep letters underneath. And I still think my mom has all the letters that I've gotten.
What kind of letters would they be though? So
They
like
would,
are there
so yeah,
some
they would.
offers, some just kind
So,
of how you doing?
normally, I mean, I'm not sure how they do it now, but you never really see. For me, I don't even think that I got official.
I got about two or three D3 letters, and that
Yeah,
was about it, so I can't
I'm not sure.
remember.
I can't remember if I got like handwritten offer letters. I just always remember saying, like, going to the university, and they would be like, look, we're offering you. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I actually got like handwritten offer letters, but I think by that time, before I even had got my first offer, I already had like a bunch of letters pinned on my wall anyway. And so, yeah, I would just pin them up, bro. Like, it didn't matter what they said. Like, it didn't matter. And so,
Schools
my
across the
team,
country, like any that.
it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter. But they all had to be Division I. Like,
Okay.
that was the only way that you made the wall, was that you were a Division I school, because that was like, it was like this whole like hashtag D1 bound thing. Growing up, like, when I was in high school, it was cool to say you were going D1. And so, yeah, man. Like, my favorite, the college that I wanted to go to was Alabama. That was the college I really, really wanted to go to. Because at that time, I wanted to play in the SEC. At that time, it was more like, if you're playing in the SEC, you're balling, like, you're going to the league. Like, no questions asked. Now it's, talent is everywhere. They're gonna find you. It doesn't really matter. So, I remember I got a letter from, and I'll tell you another story. When I was in high school, we would have, I would have like a free period. So that free period, I basically was kind of like a mail runner. Like, I would take people, take teachers their mail, or, students, or whatever it may be. And so what I did was, I knew that I was getting college letters to my high school. And so what I did was, I was basically the mail runner for my football coach. And so all those letters would go to him. And so I made sure that I was the runner for him, because whenever those letters would come in, I knew that they was coming right to me. I always see them. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it was just something that, just so infatuating about those letters, man. I kind of, and there's a reason why, like, I always, why I, put so much faith and like thought into those letters, because like my uncle was really big on, writing his goals down, and, kind of speaking things. And I come from a Christian background. My grandmother, raised in the church and everything like that. So I'm a strong believer, in having faith, and, writing things down, and, believing in God for what you want, and, all those different things. And so, I think that's kind of where I got that from, because when I was growing up, my uncle, he would always write his goals down. When he's playing baseball, he would always say, I'm going to do this. I want to do this. I want to go to the MLB, this, that, and the third. And so I would always see those. And so, kind of ingrained that into me. And so that's why, that was kind of like the reason for pinning those letters across, across the walls of my room, was because, that was me kind of like speaking into fruition, that, this is going to happen. And so
I
yeah,
mean, there's a
so
science behind that too. Like, if you just
yeah.
speak positively, if
Yeah.
like put it out into the atmosphere,
Yeah,
let alone put
absolutely.
it on your wall, like there,
Absolutely.
it's proven. You increase the likelihood of that outcome
Absolutely.
X percentage, right?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure, man. So, I did at the time. I didn't really know like what I was doing, but it was just like, I just seen him doing it, so I'm like, shoot, like, I want to do it, And so, and also, it's kind of like a sense of of accomplishment for me too. Like, I feel like even if I didn't get an offer or if I didn't, you know, get to go to college, like getting those letters was like a huge blessing for me anyway. You know what I'm saying? Being able to have all those letters. So, you know, but back to the story, you know, I would take those letters, and I was a mail runner. So I was the first one to get my mail, you know, every single time. I didn't want nobody touching my mail. I want it, you know what I'm saying? Especially coming from a college. And so yeah, I remember I got my first letter from Alabama, bro. And I was like, man, like, bro, like that was, I think that was like probably one of the last few letters that I got. It was from Alabama. Like, he didn't say like, hey, like, you know, we're interested. I mean, we didn't say like, hey, we want to offer you or anything like that. It was just like saying like, hey, like, we see you and blase blase, whatever it may be. And like, that was like crazy for me, bro, because like, dang, like, they see me, you know what I'm saying? And so
So you weren't disappointed that they weren't like, here's an
no
offer on a silver
no
platter.
I wasn't disappointed at all. Like, that for me was like, dang, like, you know, because I think for me, I kind of realized, okay, I might not be able to go to Alabama, because down that time when I got that letter, I already had accumulated like a bunch of offers from like a lot of Big Ten schools, from, you know, the U of I, Penn State, and everything like that. And so I had it was just kind of like, you know, at that point, it was like, you know, I got a letter from him, but you know, I had Vandy that had offered me, who was in the SEC, and I was like, you know what, I can go to Vandy and I can play against Alabama, you know, so I'll just do it like that. And so I got the offer from Vandy, went to Vandy. And then that's when I got to Vandy, is when you know, kind of the NFL kind of, you know, really started coming into the picture. You know, it's crazy because I committed to Vandy as a defensive back. And so I got to Vandy, switched over to receiver under James Franklin. James Franklin gets the Penn State job, leaves to go to Penn State. All of our commitments go to Penn State, or they go to University of Tennessee. So it's only literally three of us left. It's me, Trey Herndon, who's with the Jacksonville Jaguars right now. Arnold Tarpley, who's one of my best friends right now, who's in the USFL, and then Emmanuel Smith, who was a linebacker for us, who's in the XFL right now. And I'm telling you, bro, we had like a top 25 recruiting class at that time. We had Trace McSorley. I don't know if you know who that is. Trace McSorley, the
Oh,
quarterback.
yeah,
We had him.
quarterback.
We had Grant Haley, who I think he's a defensive back for, I don't know who. But we had a boatload of talent. And like, that was supposed to be a year that, like, you know, we were going to do really, really well. And so everybody left. We just stayed. And so Derek Mason comes in.
Why
So I asked,
stay though? Like, why didn't you just bolt when you're Franklin, the
I
person
think,
who found you? After
yeah.
all the letters, all the interest, it'd be easy to say, oh shit, I'm gonna
Yeah.
go.
I think because for one, for me, I think I was so close. I was close to home, but I was further away from home, where I couldn't, you know what I'm saying, be at home. I was 5 hours away, and I was 5 hours away from home, and you know, which was driving distance. And I think for me, you know, just making that commitment and,
Sure.
you know, just standing on top of that, I think that was something that I wanted to do. And you know, I'm glad I stayed. But so Derek Mason comes in, and then I ask him, you know, we got to go through this whole position thing again. So I'm like, you know, do you guys see me as a DB or a receiver? Yeah, we see you as a defensive back. Okay, cool. Let's go back to training for a defensive back and not receiver. Get to Vandy. They're like, we see you as a receiver. So they switched me back to receiver. And so realistically, I started playing receiver really my sophomore year in college. I didn't play receiver at all when I was in high school. You know, I played defensive back and I played quarterback. That's in
Oh, you
safety.
didn't play receiver in high school.
I played receiver at all in high school. I didn't play receiver at all in high school. And so Derek Mason comes in. You know, my freshman year, I suck. Like, I'm horrible. Like, I'm not no good at all. Like, I'm not no good at all at receiver, because I no idea how to run a route, no idea how to read a defense, anything like that. Like, I'm literally just going off pure, just pure work ethic and just football skill at this point. And so our offensive coordinator, they get fired. And then my sophomore year, we bring in a coach, Coach Hankton, Coach Cortez Hankton, who's he's the wide receivers coach and the passing coordinator for LSU right now. And he played in the league for a little bit as well too. And so when I met him, like, my whole world changed, because he literally showed me, like, this is what you need to do to get better. And when he showed me that spring, that summer, like my game went to a whole nother level, just from constantly just working on it, just getting myself to, be the receiver that I know that I could be. And that sophomore year, I had a really good year, but I still was still just rough around the edges. Like, I was still just kind of just going off pure talent and athleticism. Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. football savvy. It wasn't IQ-ness, And so junior year goes by, still with Coach Hank. Senior year comes, and that's when I really started hitting my strides as far as honing in on technique and releases and catching the ball and, yards after catch and everything like that. And so, college was definitely interesting, bro. We didn't win a lot. We did not win a lot at all. And, some of my guys that I already mentioned, Trey Herndon, Arnold Tarpley, Trey Ellis, those are my best bros, because going to Vandy, and when you play football, there's a lot of back and forth, because you normally don't get the same recruits as you do, let's say, a Georgia or a Florida, or you're getting guys who are
you gotta go to class.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
You actually have to do your papers at Vanderbilt as opposed to those other schools.
Exactly. And so you're getting a lot of guys who don't really necessarily, they're thinking about the league, but they're not necessarily so their plan A is to go to the league, but they also got a plan B. And if that plan A don't work, plan B is okay, let's be a doctor.
There's only so many hours in a day, right? Nobody wants to say it, but exactly. In the SEC, there's full-time football players.
Absolutely.
For the most part.
And so for me, my plan A was my plan B. You know what I'm saying? It's I got to get to the league. This is what I want to do. And this is, this is what I want to do. And so, me, Tarp, Trey Herndon, and Trey Ellis, we worked tirelessly, sometimes to the point where it was just stupid. You know what I'm saying? It was just we were just getting up at 4 a.m. and, catching jugs, catching tennis balls, and,
4 a.m. as a cop.
4 a.m. in college. And so, but this, and the 4 a.m. came from a Maymaster we had Smith together. It was me, Trey Tarpley, and Trey Ellis. My Ellis now is a, he's a big high official in North Carolina. He just graduated from law school, and that's my brother. So, he took a different route, but those three were my, when we, in that Maymaster that we had took, we had took, I think I took a Spanish class or something like that. I wanted to stay at Vanderbilt, so then that way I could just, I could do my workouts, I can be around the facility and everything like that. I wouldn't have to worry about going back home, finding the trainer and all those different things. So I just stayed there. And so I remember that one specific summer, I think it was the summer of 2016, we stayed and we were getting up at 4 a.m., working hard, getting ready for the season and everything like that. And so those were the things that we, we prided ourselves on working hard. We didn't have the team. We didn't have, I feel like at that time we didn't have all the, the height, the talent, the speed and everything like that. But it was you're not going to outwork us. And so, that's kind of what we prided ourselves on, especially us four. We kind of, and a couple of other guys as well too, I think of some names Ralph Webb, who, who's an all-time leading SEC rusher. Those guys really helped us kind of push everybody else on our team kind of forward, even though it was a struggle at times, bro. Just because guys didn't necessarily care about football. You know what I'm saying? They cared about.
You're in Nashville too. I mean,
exactly.
I might be awake at 4 a.m. in Nashville, but it's not.
Right. It's like, you're going to be to work out. Exactly.
It's going to winners and losers, right? That's not far from Vanderbilt campus. Those two bars.
Exactly. Right. And so, yeah, man, but, I think for me personally, though, who really helped me out in my college career, I said, it's kind of happened at every single level where where things have happened for me to be able to be like, to get to that next level. You know, for me in high school, it happened, you know, with the college letter. You know, okay, I can get to the collegiate level. Okay, now collegiate, how can I get to the NFL? Like, for me, I think Cortez Hankton was a big, you know, my receivers coach was a big, part of that. And then also Jordan Matthews, who now is my big brother, who went to Vandy, and he came back. He would always come back, you know, during, you know, when it's, because he got drafted to Philly in the second round. And so he would come back, and, you know, during, you know, springtime, offseason, stuff like that, and he would be back working out and everything like that. And so when I seen the way that he was working, I was like, bro, this is the way that I got to work, because he's obviously setting the blueprint for me. You know what I'm saying? So it's like every single stage has been, there's been somebody there to show me the blueprint of how to get something done, you know? And so J-Matt was a big piece of that for me, you know, to the point where, you know, he was taking me out, you know, to go, you know, we were going to eat lunch together, working out together, you know, everything, you know, watching film together, everything like that. And, you know, watching his film, you know, learning from him. And, you know, like it was so monumental for me, because being able to see a guy that came from where I came from at Vandy with, you know, some of those same struggles that, you know, I was going through at Vandy, to be like, okay, look, bro, I made it to the league. Like, you can do it too. And so learning from him and just, you know, having him in my corner was a huge help. And, you know, once I get to the league, undrafted to Arizona, you know, having Larry Fitzgerald, like that joint, it was like, I couldn't ask for anybody else to, you know, be in my corner. You know, at that time, you know, I came into the league, young guy, not really knowing exactly like what the league is about, but then being able to catch a guy who's been in the league for, you know, 15 plus years and still doing it at a high level and doing things off the field at a high level too. It's like, you can't, you know, I couldn't really ask for a better situation. And, you know, I know, I'm sure you watched the podcast, and we kind of talked about, you know, Fitz and what he's done for me and what he's still doing for me now, bro. It's like, it's crazy.
I love what he wrote on that. He wrote on a sheet of paper, like, you had a bad practice, right?
Yeah.
Your career, and you're kind of on the bubble, and it was like, I need you to stick around. He didn't verbally say it to you. He just wrote it down and it left in your locker. What was that story?
Yeah. So it was, we basically were in, we're in a meeting. Hang on, baby. We're in our position meetings, and like I said, I had a bad practice or something like that. And
my rookie year,
and had a bad practice, and he kind of just wrote down on a piece of paper, and I was literally sitting right next to him, and kind of just wrote down. He wrote down, you know, Trent, I need you to continue to handle your business because I want you here. And so after that, like, it just went, our relationship is kind of skyrocketed. You know what I'm saying? Like, I literally just went to play pickleball with him, like a week ago or something like that. And so, like, I drove up to West Palm, seen him, you know, got to talk with him. And, you know, it's just been monumental, you know, for me, for my career. Because, like, I've adopted the way that he's trained, you know, I've adopted the way that he's taken, his whole philosophy of how he does things, you know, on the field. And, you know, business wise and everything like that, the things that he's done is kind of, you know, pushed me in the direction to where I, you know, the things that I don't want to do, you know, for myself and for my family. So
this, look like with Fitz, like what a day in the life with Larry Fitzgerald. We hear how hard of a worker he is, that it's next level. But what does it really look like up close?
Yeah.
What do you take from him?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think, you know, he's a jokester, man. Like, he is a complete jokester, but he definitely is as advertised, man. Like, just a good dude. I think when I was training with him in the summer, I can't remember what year that was, but it was the summer that I trained with him. We were in Minnesota, and so basically what he does is he gets up, trains, and then goes golf. Like, that's what he does. But then he's also, you know, once he's done golfing, he's coming back, handling business, taking phone calls, doing things, you know, with his businesses and everything like that. So, like, that's kind of like a day in the life. Like, but always the work always came first. Like, it was never, you know, it was never, hey, let's go golf or let's go do this. I was like, no, like we got to put this work in and then we can do whatever, you know, we want to do, you know. And the thing that he always told me, you know, I kind of asked him, I was like, Fitz, like, how did you, like, for how so many years, like, how did you, you know, just be so consistent with, you know, your performance, not being complacent and just being, you could, cause he could have easily been like, you know, I've done this, I've done that, you know, I've broken this record, did this, did that. You know, I don't really got to do anything, but like, you never seen that from like, every time he stepped out on the field, it was like, he was working, like he was undrafted. Like he was working to make the team. Like it was always like that, you know? And so he always told me, he said, you know, Trent, for me to be able to, you know, do the things that I want to do off the field, you know, have these, you know, have these endorsement deals, have these, you know, whatever it may be. He knew that he had to perform at a high level. And that only came from the work that he put in. And so he knew that that had to, he knew that that always came first. And so for me, like, you know, it's just, that was just monumental for a young guy, you know, coming into the league. Like, you thinking NFL is flashy, this, that, and this. Like, no. Like, this is just, this is how you're supposed to do it, you know? And so, you know,
which when is I huge. I mean, that's, you're a pro for the first time.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't know what you don't know. Like that absolutely just becomes the expectation instantly.
Absolutely.
Larry Fitzgerald, Hall of Famer, work absolutely like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As an undrafted guy, I mean, that's huge. But it also takes you kind of realizing, okay, I'm going to like take this in. I'm going to use it. There's absolutely probably other receivers that are like, eh, whatever, old man.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you're right. You're definitely right. Because I've always asked him, like, man, he was always saying, like, man, I've seen so many guys, you know, I would try to, you know, pass things down to them, but they just wouldn't take it. And it just baffles me. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, like, why would you not listen to this guy? You know what I'm saying? And I think it just stems from different reasons. You know, some guys may feel like they got it figured out and other guys feel like, you know, so, you know, it is what it is. But, like I said, being able to have him was huge, man. Like, and just for my playing career, like me having his philosophy and the way that he approaches his work, you know, being able to see that from a day-to-day standpoint. Like, I mean, and it's crazy because, like, you'll get guys that's in the league, like, you know, top-tier guys, you know, that are at their position. And, you know, some of them will have the organization, you know, by the throat. And they don't have to necessarily do all the things that they're required to do. They might not – they don't have to practice if they don't want to. You know, as long as you're going out performing, Fitz never did that, bro. Like, it was – I'm putting my work in. Like, I don't care what it looks like, I'm putting my work in. He always had one day, he had one off day, and it was a Wednesday, because it was like a vet day for him. But I'm telling you, when he stepped out on the field, like, it was all work. Like, it wasn't, I can't go, I can't do this. I've never seen him miss a game, nothing like that. Like, he always put in the work. Like, it's just monumental to have, you know what I'm saying? Especially for a young guy, you know, to be able to see that, because as you grow and as you get, you know, more influence, as you get, you know, more money and contracts and everything like that, like you grow to appreciate the game. And I think that's the biggest thing that I took away from him, is how much he appreciated it and how much he respected the game, you know? It was huge, man, for sure.
But you know what though, like you were built for that world. Yeah. You were built for being in the right spot at the right time to take that all in. Your upbringing, I mean, I know we just kind of zipped through everything there, but like, what did you really go through at a young age, you know, 2 hours south of Chicago there? I know about your grandmother working at Walmart, you know, for 16 years, making sure the register's clean. I mean, I imagine she's a huge influence. I love how you said, people go to her when they're at Walmart. Like, they could go to any aisle, but they go to her. So I imagine she's a huge influence. But whether it's that or something else, what did you go through, you think, that equipped you to be ready for that opportunity?
I think for me, growing up at a young age, I know that, you know, for me, I didn't have the, you know, like the support of my biological father. But like, I'm always careful when I say that, because my uncles and my grandmother, they did a really great job of, you know, providing that for me. You know what I'm saying? Being that second parent for me. And sports was always kind of like my getaway anyway. So for me, I think, you know, just being around sports all the time was like something that was something that I always just wanted to do. You know, it's just like I was just always just naturally just good at it. But I truly think that like that work ethic piece just comes from, I don't know, I just think it's just something that was just God given. Like it's just something that I always wanted to do. But I will say though, my high school, when I was in high school, I think I was a sophomore. The thing that, and this is the thing that always kind of clicks in me, that stays with me even to this day. My stepdad, who's a basketball coach, at our JUCO back home, my mom's husband. I remember him telling me, well, it's two things. I remember my mom telling me that because my grades were really bad when I was in high school. Like I was a poor student. Like I didn't do well. I was just worried about sports. And my mom was like, you know, I'm not going to be able to pay for you to go to school. Like, so I don't know, you know, like, I don't know what you're going to be able to do. Like, I can't pay for you to go. And so that was one thing that kind of woke me up. And, you know, another thing was, and I think another, she had told me, like, you know, my mom was tough, man. Like she didn't, you know, into her rightfully so, she, like, she had to be, like, it was me and her, you know, like she had to kind of be that dad and that mom. And she kind of told me, she was like, I'm not going to be able to pay for you to go to school. And when you get eight, when you turn 18, like, you got to get out. Like, that's just what it is. You grown, you know? And so yeah. I don't know if that was like a scare tactic or what, but like it worked, you know what I'm saying? So, but that was one thing that stuck with me. But
that's like old school. That's what we hear, like our grandparents, like, you turn 18, yeah. get the hell out of here, get a job.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, the one thing that definitely sticks with me, my stepfather, man, I remember like yesterday, bro. We were on our way from somewhere. We were parking the car to get out to go into the house, and he was like, he just said he was like, man, you don't work hard enough, and I was like what you mean? Like, he's like, you just don't. He's like, you don't work hard enough. Like, you say you want to do this, you say you want to do that, like you don't want to go Division One. Like you don't work hard enough. And I just kind of took that, and I'm like, what? Like, and it messed with me, you know? And so ever since then, like, bro, like that, I think that lit the fire up underneath me, you know? Like, to that day was like, nobody on earth is going to outwork me. Like, I kind of took that, and I just kind of just ran with it. And no matter what it was, like, we had leaf bags in our backyard, and I remember laying them down and using them as like agile bags to like run up over them, you know, like do high knees over them and run through them and stuff like that. And so, you know, and I think that's kind of where like that work ethic kind of came from. You know, obviously, you know, me talking about my grandmother, you know, how professional she is, and you know, but my stepdad, I think he really lit that fire up underneath me, and like he challenged me, you know what I'm saying? And my mom, you know, saying that, you know, I'm not gonna be able to pay for you to go to school. And I knew I didn't want to stay where I didn't want to just be that dude that played football, was really good at football, you know, in high school, and now I'm working at a factory job, you know, back home. Like, I didn't want that for myself. I knew I wanted more, you know. And so yeah, I knew that, and at that time it was like that the only answer was to work. Like, that was it. Like, for me at that time, it was like, you got to work to get to where you want to be. And so that was kind of the thing that really struck that fire up underneath me to push me.
How old were you when your stepdad says that?
I want to say I was a sophomore in high school. So I was probably around like maybe 16, somewhere around there. Maybe like
was he right? Like, looking
no
back,
he was right.
Were you not?
Yeah. No, he was definitely right. I think at that time I was kind of like being lazy. I think it was like in basketball season or somewhere around there. Like, and like I really wasn't, and that was before I had accumulated any offers, any letters or anything. So like, I just wasn't, you know, I was just like, oh, I'm just naturally good at it. Like, I don't really gotta do nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, at that time I just wasn't really looking for it. And I think at that time I didn't really know how to work. I didn't know what to do. But when he told me that, I was like, F it. Like, I'm gonna just figure it out on my own. Like, you know, putting the leaf bags down. Okay, let's just go outside. Let's just throw. Like, whatever it may be, you know, getting the receivers, you know, that I had in high school. And let's just go throw. Like I just feel more in love with the game and just was just around it, you know, just watching it and all those.
Maybe
type
it
of
pisses you off too. Like you want to prove it wrong. Like, no.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely did for sure. Like I wanted to show him otherwise. And I think, you know, always having that thought in the back of my head that, you know, my mom wasn't going to be able to pay for me to go to school. You know, yeah. It was like, okay, well, shoot, I got to get a scholarship then. Like, that's the only way I'm going to be able to go, you know, and seeing my uncles get those letters when I was in middle school, you know, because that was still in the back of my head too. Like, my uncles went to college, so why can't I do it, you know? And yeah. So, you know, it was like, I knew I had to get a scholarship to go because that was the only way I was going to be able to go.
Who are your uncles again, before I forget?
So my uncles was Dabo Worthington, so Dabo, and then Worthington, Worthington, and then my other uncle was Aaron, Ayron, same last name.
Gotcha. And what were you said, like, your biological dad wasn't really around. Do you know him? Yeah. Is there any type of relationship there? Your main dad?
Yeah, I know him. You know, we've had conversations here and there. You know, but I didn't really know who he was until I was 16. So, you know, kind of, you know, that the ship kind of had sailed, you know, by then. You know, it just wasn't, you know, the relationship wasn't there. But I've talked to him. I've reached out to him before. We've had, you know, cordial conversations and stuff like that. So there's no love lost or anything like that, you know. So, but my little brother's dad kind of stepped in. He actually raised both of us. But he actually passed away in Arizona. He passed away in Arizona in 2016 when I was in Arizona.
Is this the stepdad who challenged you?
No, so the stepdad who challenged me is who's my mom is married to now.
Okay.
That's the basketball coach. Yeah. So before then, my mom was dating my little brother's dad. So my little brother's dad. So they were actually dating before he moved to Arizona. And
so he really raised you then.
He raised me then. Yeah, for sure. So when he left Arizona, my mom started dating. Who my stepdad is now. He played overseas basketball, and they were dating. They were doing like a long term distance relationship. He came back. Yeah, he came back to our hometown, and he was doing basketball. He was coaching middle school basketball at the time, and now he's coaching at the collegiate level. And so my little brother's dad actually was the one who raised us. And so he had a lot to do with like my competitive spirit too, like as far as like sports and stuff like that. He was always involved, like, you know, taking me to my football games and being my coach and everything like that. And so I credit a lot of like my competitiveness to him for sure. Like, he was always, you know, always taking me out in the backyard, you know, with the, you know, just, you know, playing, you know, playing, you know, playing football and just making sure I was just. So yeah.
Boy, that's still, had to be kind of traumatic to lose him in 2016, yeah. I would think. Yeah. Man, how did he pass?
Yeah, man, it was hard, man. He passed away when I was actually in college, like that summer that I was telling you about, that me and my guy stayed at Vandy, that May mentioned. He passed that summer. He actually he drowned. He was always, like I said, he was always like playing games, like competitive, always, you know, trying to see who can do something the longest, first, fastest, or whatever. And at that time, I think he was playing. I think he was playing with some kids. And I think he went underneath. He went underneath, and I guess they were kind of doing like who can hold their breath the longest or whatever it may be. And he went down. And he just never came back up. And you know, after that, he got on life support, and they ended up taking him off, man. So yeah, bro. Yeah.
All from just playing a game of who can stay underwater the longest.
Yep. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
Holy hell.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
I mean, how did that hit you? How'd you find out?
It hit me pretty hard. So my mom had called me and told me. She had called me and told me. It hit me pretty hard. Especially because I was in college too. I think I had just completed my freshman year, sophomore year. I was going into I think we were going into that. Yeah, we were going into that sophomore season. And it hit me pretty hard, man, because, you know, for one, like, obviously, you know, like, I did call him my dad because he was there for a great deal amount of my life, you know. And, you know, it was kind of it was hard because that was like the first time that actually like a close loved one of mine had passed away, you know. And, you know, not being able to see him and talk to him and everything like that was kind of it still kind of hurts me to this day, like not being able to really, you know, say something to him before he had passed away or anything like that. That always kind of hurts me a little bit. But I think that, you know, me going to Arizona, it was just so fitting. You know what I'm saying? Like, years later, I get undrafted, I go to Arizona, and it was crazy because he was trying to get me to come down to Arizona to visit him. And I just never was able to make it out there because of college. You know, I was just always moving around and stuff like that, and always had to do spring workouts, summer workouts, all those different things. So, yeah. It was actually pretty dope to like actually go to Arizona and start my career there. So yeah.
So like, from what age to age was he kind of like your dad?
Now, I would say he was probably there from. He was there when I was really young, actually, man. Like, okay. I would say like at least probably. I would say like maybe six to. I would say maybe six to about like 13.
Gotcha.
Like six years old, maybe even younger than that. Maybe about like five or something like that to about like when I was like five to like middle school. Yeah.
And then like your stepdad entered the picture.
Exactly. Yeah. My stepdad who my mom is married to now, he stepped into the picture because my little brother's dad ended up moving to Arizona.
Wow. Yeah. I can't imagine what. Yeah. I mean, all these kids around and stuff, like seeing that.
Yeah, God. It's crazy. And yeah.
You mentioned earlier too how like in your town, like you didn't want to just work at a factory. Like, is that kind of what happens with a lot of talent with where you're from? Like, there might be somebody who's really talented, but they're not taking that next step that you are. They're not, you know, putting in the work that you were. And they, I don't know, what is the factory in town? Like, where do people kind of end up there?
Yeah, people actually kind of end up at McLean's. That's what it's called. It's called McLean's. But I think that, man, honestly, you hear those stories all the time, right? Like, you those guys that who have the success in high school, and then they're like back in the community, and you know they're working at the factory. Like, and I'm not saying that like that's a bad thing. I just knew that for me that like it was more for me to go have and more for me to go do. And I think that I just didn't want to have that. I didn't want to have that label on me. You know, I didn't want to be just another guy that just, you know, did well in high school and, you know, wasn't able to do anything after that. You know, my stepdad now, who always told me that, you know, doesn't matter what you do outside, it doesn't matter what you do in high school. It matters is what you do after high school. And like, my stepdad was like an All-American basketball player, like McDonald's All-American, played overseas, did really well in college. So, like, he knew what it took to DeJuan Gerard. That's his name, DeJuan Gerard. D-A-J-U-A-N.
Okay. I was going to say, maybe that rang a bell. God, he sounds like he was a hell of a player. Jeez.
Yeah. No, he was a McDonald's. I'm pretty sure he was a McDonald's All-American. Don't quote me on that, but I think he
– Yeah.
I think he was for sure. But yeah, he played basketball. So like he played at a really high level. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't make it to the NBA, but like he had that drive about him. You know what I'm saying? Like, we both had the same similarities, you know, a lot. And he's actually from Danville, you know? So, you know, having him around was a huge help, you know, as well too. But yeah, I didn't want to be that guy that, you know, like I said, that just did well in high school. Played all these sports and then just kind of came back, you know, and you know what I'm saying, just not really doing anything, you know. And so I wanted to further myself and just, you know, really see how far I could take it.
Boy, and it, you get to the NFL and I mean, these last 5 years, or might shorten you one, six, it's
I mean, five, you know, so five, I'm going in six. Yeah. Going in,
because it's been a long climb to even have the opportunity to contribute in an offense. I mean, Arizona, San Francisco, they're just not using you. They're really not giving you an opportunity. Well, how frustrating has it been? How, I mean, take it from there. Like, how have you gotten to this point to be a number three receiver in one of the more prolific offenses in the whole league?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you. And like, I'm a really speak, you know, just truthfully, man. I think that, you know, just as far as like all the politics and everything like that, because I think too, you know, there's sometimes some things just don't need to be said, but I think that a lot of guys,
you can say them. Let
No, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I think that because I feel like a lot of guys who are in that undrafted position and, you know, are kind of like in that low totem pole. Like, I feel like, you know, they kind of have to, they need to hear, you know, what I'm going to say, because I think it'll help some guys out. And so, but came in undrafted to Arizona, wasn't really expecting too much of myself. Like I just wanted to make the roster. Like that was it. Like, make the team, make the roster, and let's see where we go from there. So I come in, me and Christian Kirk were actually, me, Christian Kirk, and Jalen Tolliver were the only three receivers to make it, to make the roster, if I'm not mistaken. Christian Kirk was actually drafted, you know, in the second round. That's like my brother to this day too. So, you know, came in, you know, was playing on special teams, and that was actually kind of what helped me out making the team, was because in college, like, and our coach, Jeff Jennick, in college, he made all the starters play special teams. Like, it didn't matter what you was doing. Like, you played special teams. And so, I think that really helped me out a lot, because it didn't give me that ego to like, oh, like, I'm only going to play receiver. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, like, you got to play special teams in this team. And I already knew that going in. And I feel like a lot of guys, they don't know that, like, going in, especially like I said, undrafted guys, low drafted guys, like, you got to be able to figure out a way to get into this back door, you know, because there's a lot of other guys that they're bringing in. You got the drafted guys, you got the guys that are, well, you already got the guys that are already on the team. Then you got the drafted guys, and then you got a bunch of undrafted guys that they bring in as well too. So it's like, how can you finagle your way in to, you know what I'm saying, making a roster? And so I knew for me that it had to be on special teams. Like, I knew they weren't expecting much of me, but I came in my rookie year, like, balled out in training camp. Like, you know, I did my thing. Had a really, really good camp, really, really good preseason. And after that, ended up making the team. It was really, really cool. That first year was, like, it was really, really dope. You know, I didn't really even care about being undrafted. Like, I wasn't really even, like, too upset about it, because, like, I knew what I could do. I knew I could make the team. And so I was like, okay, look, I'm here. Like, that's all I needed, was just to get my foot in the door. Like, and that's what I did. And so, rookie year, 8 games go by. We have some injuries go. We had some injuries happen, and I start for like eight games straight. You know, and that was kind of like my first taste to the league. Like, you know, I was out there making some plays, but I wasn't out there making a lot of plays. Like I said, still kind of like going off of just athleticism, no technique, stuff like that. And, you know, I was able to score a touchdown. I think I accumulated like, 219 yards or something like that on like 19 grabs or something. And I ended up scoring a touchdown my first year. So, like, you got to think, like, undrafted player starting in like 8 games, you know, I'm like, you know, my first time coming in, and I'm like, okay, like I'm ready to make this jump from year 1 to year 2. And so come in year 2, and I'm fully expecting year 2 to be like, okay, I'm going to be playing a lot more on offense. Like, I know that I can do this. And so year 2 go, you know, I have a great offseason training. Like, I get better. Well, actually, in that spring, I had a really, really good spring. Coach Jerry Sullivan, old school wide receivers coach, who is a legend. You look like a legend. And I would say that he was a guy who actually propelled me into the receiver that I am now, as far as like technique, you know, watching film, learning how to release on guys, learning how to come in and out of breaks, like the taking it all the way down to the technicality of being a receiver. Like, he's the one I feel like that's really helped me in my NFL career to be able to, you know, to take it to where it's going. And I always tell him, like, he always talks about technique and how to use your feet and everything like that. And we still literally exchange text messages to this day, you know, about, like, you know, hey, you know, I like the way that you use your footwork there, whatever it may be. And so, like, I tell him all the time, like, man, like, you've literally, like, changed my game, you know, to, you know, and, like, I'll never stop using the technique. And so, yeah, I had him in the spring. I had Sully in the spring. And David Rye was our main position coach, but Selly was he was kind of like our assistant receivers coach. And that spring, I had a really, really good spring. I want to say I was the number three receiver then. I was the number three receiver at that point. It was me, Fitz, and Christian Kirk. And we were playing that same year. Arizona drafted three guys. They drafted Andy Isabella, they drafted Hakeem Butler, and they drafted Keyshawn Johnson that year. And you know, obviously, you know, with them being drafted, you know, in the offseason and everything like that, I was like, oh man, they didn't draft the three guys, so they're not really, you know, really too worried about me or whatever it may be. But I was like, you know what, let's just go to work. Like, let's just go to work and let's just see who – let's go to camp and let's see who's the best man, you know, at that point. And so end up going in the spring, played really well in the spring. My game was elevating. I had learned this whole new technique and everything like that. So I was feeling really, really confident. So go into the offseason, training hard again. And like my game, I can just feel my game just like skyrocketing. It's just going really, really well. Going to training camp, and I had one of the best training camps of my life. Like, I was playing lights out, like literally playing lights out. I remember, I think that preseason I had like two touchdowns and back-to-back games in the preseason. Started one game at receiver. And then before the first game, you know, before we played the Detroit Lions, my receivers coach comes up to me. He's like, man, you know, like, you should be starting, but the GM doesn't want to see you. They don't want to see you play. They want to see the drafted guys play. And so, like, that really hit me hard, because it was like, that was like my first time kind of like, dealing with politics, you know, in a way, because that was like my first time, like, putting in a whole bunch of work and not really seeing it, you know, come to light. In previous years, like, obviously, you know, high school, like, I was putting in work, I'm getting my letters, right? Putting in work, I'm getting offers. Putting in work, now I'm committed. Now, okay, I go to college, I'm putting in work, I'm starting to become a better receiver, I'm making plays and putting in work. Now I get to the NFL, you know what I'm saying? Now everything is, you know, kind of going. And so this is like my first time actually, like, being told no, when I probably rightfully rightfully deserved it and earned it, you know, and won the spot. But that's just something that that's just how the league works sometimes. You know, there's politics, there's things that are completely, you know, out of one's control. And that's just how things go. And, you know, it really hit me hard that year. I kind of really went into a shell. Like, it's just kind of just like, F it. Like, you know what I'm saying? This is how it's going to be. Like, just whatever, like, cool, whatever. But luckily I had Jeff Rogers, who was my special teams coordinator in Arizona, who really helped me, you know, not per se, like, really talk to me about, you know, what was going on, but like the way that he coached me, and the way that he coached the players on special teams, like, he really made me want to play for him on special teams. And so, like, you know, I was like, you know what, I'm just making my mark here, you know, on special teams, you know, being that gunner, you know, being, you know, on kickoff or whatever it may be, just try to, you know, continue to just make plays wherever I can on special teams. And I always had the thought in the back of my head, like, you know what, it could be worse. You could be cut. You could be on practice squad, but you're an undrafted player who's made the team for a second year in a row, you know, made the 53 man roster. Like, you've never been cut. You've never been, you know, on practice squad. You never had to go down to practice squad, get elevated, come back down, come back up. Like, I've seen a lot of those horror stories, and like, I've never had to go through that, you know. And so
Isaiah Hodgins, we were just talking last week.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, and
it happens all the time.
Yeah, man. It's tough. And so I, you know, I kind of, you know, always had to kind of tell myself that, you know, what you're going through is, you know, it's tough, but like, other people, you know, there are other people are dealing with a lot worse. And I think the thing for me, it was like, it was just so always in me that I always knew that I could play. Like, I know what I can do. Like, I got Larry Fitzgerald next to me telling me that, you know, writing me these letters saying like, look, man, I want you here so you can play. Larry's always telling me, man, look, you can play, you can do this, you can do that. And it's just like, man, like, where is this at? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not playing out that way. And so, I'm actually gonna back up before I got to the league. And this is really important to me, so I want to share it. Before I got to the league, I was training in Chicago with Kerry Neal, for my pro day. And I was doing all my pro day training out there. And I had went to a church that was called All Nations Chicago. And I went to a church out there. And, you know, I heard of the pastor through a mutual friend, you know, listened to a couple of his sermons when I was in college. And, you know, I happened to be, you know, in Chicago. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to just go, you know, to the church. And went to the church. Don't know who the pastor is at all. You know, nothing like that. Go there, the pastor at the end of the service, the pastor points at me and picks me out of the crowd and tells me to come up. And I go up and he kind of basically prophesies over me, you know, basically saying that, hey, you know, you're going to the NFL, you know, it's not going to be the way that you had hoped for. And I can actually send you the video so that way you can kind of pull some pieces. And I've never shared it with a lot of people, but I kind of feel like now, like, I really want to be able to let people know that like for me personally, like God is real, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know, not to kind of get people to, you know, switch over their religion or whatever it may be, but just be able to just be a living testimony. Like God is real. Like God is, he does the thing that he said he's going to do. But neither here nor there, you know, the pastor prophesies to me, kind of lets me know, hey, man, like, you know, you're going to the NFL. It's not going to be the way that you had hoped. And you're working really, really hard right now. And I don't know this guy. I don't know him. I've never talked to him or anything. And everything that he's saying is literally spot on. And so.
When was that again? I'm sorry, Trent.
So I did my pro day in. I think it was in 2017 when this had happened in 2017. Yeah,
so it's kind of like foreshadowing to everything that you
went exactly. So it was literally before I had got to the NFL. I was literally just training for my pro day in Chicago before I even had, you know, signed to a team or anything like that. Hmm. And so, you know, for me. And like I said, I'll send you the recording of it so you can.
Yeah, kind of, that'd be great.
But I went back to that story because, you know, to tie it into basically what I was saying, like, okay, here's God telling me that, okay, this is gonna happen, this is gonna happen, and it's like, okay, God, where is it at? Like, I'm not playing, I'm not making any plays. Like, I'm just on special teams, but. In the midst of those things of wanting what I wanted, he still was kind of showing up. God was still showing up because, like I said, I hadn't been cut. I made the team as an undrafted free agent. You know, I wasn't on practice squad or anything like that. Like, I was still, you know, I was still living out my dream and like living out exactly what was told to me. You know, hey, you're going to the NFL. Okay. Like, okay. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm still here. I'm still in the promise. You know, I'm still living through it. And so, you know, going back to, you know, what I was saying about the coach telling me that, you know, you don't want to play, like the coaches don't, the GM doesn't want to see you play. He wants to see the other guys play or whatever it may be. You know, that, like I said, that really had put me in a hole and, you know, playing special teams and, you know, finagling my way in, continuing to come through the back door and going to my third year, the same exact thing happens. I have another good camp. Like, and I think for me, like I could have easily just been like, like, I know I'm not going to play. Whatever. And then that's when we got DeAndre Hopkins. We got D Hop that year. We got D Hop that year, my third year. So we had D Hop, we had Fitz, and we had
Isabella, had, Butler.
Yeah, we had all. So, but
all
and that's
three.
And that's the crazy part. That second year, I think Hakeem Butler ended up getting cut that second year, and so I think he ended up getting cut. He ended up going to a different team, and so we had all those guys still that third year. So I was like, you know what, I could easily just been like, F it, like, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'm not gonna play, I'm not gonna train. But I was like, nah, bro, like, let's continue to put the work in, like, just continue just to believe, like, you know, it's gonna eventually happen. Didn't happen. You know, I was expecting after that third year to come back, because I was making a lot of plays on special teams. Like, I was doing really, really well on special teams. And we had two other guys who was undrafted. It was three guys. And this is the crazy part. I think we had maybe about like seven guys in our – I think we had maybe over – we had at least over 10 guys get drafted in our 2018 class. And it was literally me, Christian, Ezekiel Turner, and Dennis Gardick, who was left. Four guys out of the whole class of 2018. It was at the end of the 3 years that still made it and that was still on the team. And so for me, I felt like Arizona, they wanted to get rid of me, you know, because I didn't give them the chance to, you know what I'm saying? I didn't give them that satisfaction. I didn't give them that satisfaction. Like, you know, wow, we got, you know, we gonna get rid of this guy, you know. But it's like, no, like, you know, I'm continue to show up and, you know, and training camp, continue to show you that I can play, that I should be playing. And even if you don't give it to me, like, it's like, okay, that's fine. But you know that I can play. It's not gonna be, you're not going to not play me because I didn't show up for camp and I didn't win the job. I wasn't giving them that satisfaction. And so, you know, third year goes by and you know, I'm thinking that they're going to tender me. Why am I right mind? I'm thinking that. I have no idea. When you look back and look over all the years, like, you know, from the first 2 years, like, you would think, like, yeah, bro, they really don't want you here. Like, in my right mind, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm coming back. And so they ended up not wanting to bring me back, but they said that I could sign back for a you know, for league minimum at that time. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, you know, I had contributed on special teams, was one of the core special teams guys. Like, did, you know, like, there was no way that I was doing that. And so the thing was, when the GM at that time, Steve Kime, had told my agent, we don't see him as a receiver. Like, he can't play wide receiver. I said, okay, that's fine. And so when he said that, that's what kind of like told me, okay, like, it's time to move on. You know, it's time to move on. It's time to just, you know, go a different direction. And so that year we were in free agency. We had the Jets were in conversations, Miami and San Fran. They wanted me to come play. And at that time, you know, I was kind of thinking like, okay, what would be best beneficial for, you know, for me and my wife, you know, for us to go. And so I had talked to, you know, Kyle Shanahan, I had talked to John Lynch, I had talked to the special teams coach over at San Francisco. And I was like, man, I want to go over there, because I think that'd be a really good fit, you know, winning organization. Shanahan obviously is a great play caller, a great offense. You know, I was like, and I seen there was some room for me to be able to compete at the wide receiver spot. And so we ultimately made the decision to go to San Francisco. Me and the wife, we pack up the U-Haul, and I gotta give credit, you know, to my wife too, man. Like, over these past couple of years, you know, she's been, especially, well, oh yeah, over these past couple of years, even in my whole career, like, my wife has literally helped me train. Like, I mean, like, literally being my quarterback. Like, I go out, run routes, and she's throwing the ball to me, shooting me jugs. You know, just really just being a really helping hand, and, you know, helping me prolong my career. And, you know, my wife stayed in Arizona. I went to San Francisco for, you know, for OTAs, phase one, and all those different things. And she stayed up, packed everything up, and we got the U-Haul. We moved to Cali. We made the move to California. And, So yeah, I'll if you got any questions, I'll get to San Francisco.
I mean, with so when Steve Keim tells your receivers coach, is that David?
Well, no, he tells my agent. He tells my agent that
because I'm
agent,
going back to the
oh, okay. Yeah.
With the three receivers, was that? He's telling the position coach.
He told my position coach. Well, this is what my position coach told me.
Who's David Ra? I want to say, right?
David Ra. Yeah, David Ra. David Ra. He told me that's what my position coach told me, that you know they don't want to, you know, the GM doesn't want to see you play. He wants to see the other guys play.
Was that the third preseason game or?
This was after the third preseason game. So this was before the first game. This was before the first regular season game. Now, mind you, the first two preseason games, I scored touchdowns in back-to-back games. And so I'm going into the third preseason game thinking that I'm starting at the number three spot because I'm like, bro, I won it. It was clear cut. Like, it wasn't even there was no debate. And all the starters, they weren't playing in the third game. And so I'm like, and they told me that I was playing. I'm like, why am I playing? Like, I shouldn't be playing. And at that time, I kind of knew what was going down.
I mean, that's straight up politics. They drafted three players.
Yep.
I mean, these are their picks, their guys.
Yep. Yep.
And yep. I mean, you hit on it. It had to have just driven you to the point of insanity that you worked your ass off at every point. It's a meritocracy from, you know, being a little kid, looking up to your uncles, to high school, to college. You know, you're busting ass at every turn to the point where you're still doing that.
Right.
And it doesn't matter. They drafted these guys, so they're going to play. I mean, how does that not, you said it put you in a shell, but how does that not just send you to depression? I mean,
bro. And I think honestly, bro, there's times where like I went to that point, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that I did have depression at some point, bro. Like, just because of the amount of work that I was putting in and like the amount of faith that I can continue would have to, and like the mental battle, like going back and forth with myself. Like, can you do this? Like, is what God told you real? You know, is this going to hold true? Like, and just continue to go back and forth and like continue to put in work knowing that you're not going to play. It's like, And I look back on it sometimes. I'm like, bro, how did you do that? Like, how did you continue to every summer literally bust your butt knowing that nobody's outworking you, you're doing all the right stuff, and you know that you're not going to play? And I think for me, it was just like, it was just something that I had to go through. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just maturity wise.
When you know you're better than all three of these guys, that's the thing. You know you're better than all three of those players. And absolutely, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think anybody out there in any profession, it would drive you mad.
Yeah, man. And I think at times it did, bro. And I think it's just, I just refuse to be not. Like, I just, that word that I was given when I was in Chicago, like I was like, I know God's not a liar. Like, I know that this is true. I know that this is going to come no matter how long it takes. I just got to continue to just put the work in, you know. And I think for me, you know, just always trying to look at the positives, you know, okay, I'm on the team, I'm on the 53 man roster, I'm getting the NFL check, you know, I'm able to provide, I'm able to pay my bills, I'm able to travel, I'm able to do all of these things that I want to do. But it's like, you know, at that same time, it's like, F all that. Like, I want to play. Like, I want to get what I rightfully earn. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like I'm going up to the coach and I'm telling him like I should be playing, and it's like, no, bro, like I'm earning it. Like, it's literally on the tape. I'm showing you that I'm better than him at this point in the time of the season. Play me. Like, I couldn't like put the pieces to the puzzle together. I'm like, why is this happening? Like, what is this? And so I think at times, bro, I did have depression, man. Like, I think that there was times where I just, you know, I would come home, you know, I wouldn't really talk to my wife. I wouldn't really, you know, and I tried my best, and it was just eating at me because I just knew that I was better than them. And I knew that I should have been playing. But like I said, neither here nor there. I think that it was just something that I just had to, I had to go through, you know.
What's it like when you go home? Like, how do you sit alone with these thoughts and deal with that kind of dark place?
Yeah, man, I think for me, I just relying on my faith, you know what I'm saying? Just continue, like I said, I think that, you know, always just trying to look at the positives, you know, in the situation, because at the end of the day, there's always positives in every situation. There's always a solution, right? And so I think for me, it was like, okay, what I can do is either I got two options. I can stop working and give them the benefit of the doubt, prove them right, and just say, oh, no, he can't do it. He can't do this. He doesn't belong here. Prove them right, or continue to put the work in and prove them wrong. And don't give them the satisfaction of cutting you or letting you go or saying, oh, he couldn't, we know that he couldn't do it. Or it's like, do you just continue to make plays, continue to, you know, finagle your way in, just like how you've always done your whole entire life, like sneaking through the back door and continuing to just show up, continuing to just do, you know what I'm saying, put the work in. And you got this great relationship with Larry. You got this great relationship with Kurt and Chase. You got guys that are around you that are uplifting you, saying that you should be playing. Like, man, like, I wish you was out there playing with me. Like, you deserve this. You deserve that. Like, and it's just like in my head, I would always hang on to those things, because it's like an 18-year veteran who's one of the top three receiver in the league is not telling me that I can play in this league just to make me feel good. Like, you know, so I would just have to sit with those thoughts and remember.
You get the support of the more powerful person in the organization. Right. I mean, it's right. I'd say Fitz knows a little bit more than Steve Keim.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, you know, hanging on to those thoughts really, really, really helped me out for sure.
Man.
Yeah, bro.
It's crazy. I mean, I forget how. I mean, they, let alone taking Andy Isabella ahead of DK Metcalf.
Right, exactly.
Whoops.
That kind of tells you, you know, that kind of tells you everything you need to know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't seen, yeah. That tells you everything you need to know right there. So,
I mean, and Hakeem Butler's out of the NFL like in a year. Yeah. I don't even know what Keyshawn, I don't even know if he did anything.
Yeah, I think Keyshawn is, he's with Buffalo. And, like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of,
is he?
You know, yeah, he's with Buffalo. I think he's on the practice squad, and okay. I think, and I want to say, you know, to all those guys, or, you know, all of them are good guys, and I ain't, you know, I'm not
backing
or anything like that, but I just think that, you know, when it came down to it, it was just like, you know, at that time it was taken away from me, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's just.
How are you watching that draft? Like, are you watching the draft? Are you seeing them take receiver after receiver?
Yeah,
after receiver?
Yeah, I was watching it. Yeah, I was watching it. But I think for me at that time, it was like, at that time, I was like, I know they're not better than me. Like, I know they're not better than me. I know they're not going to outwork me. And so I went into camp, and it was like, it just gave me another fire. And it was just like, okay, I'm going to have the best camp of my life. You know, catch everything thrown my way. I'm going to make plays. And that's exactly what I did. And I was like, I'm going to show them that I'm better than them. And, you know, it just, for whatever reason, man, is like, you know, it just didn't go the way that it was supposed to go.
Well, it's because you're not a wide receiver, you know.
Exactly right.
It's not, right? As the GM said, it's not who you are as a human being. Exactly. When you hear when you hear that via your agent, it's got a sting. I mean, if you prove it, I'm better than all these guys you drafted.
Right.
You're seeing it every day.
Exactly.
And then he says that. I mean, I can't imagine the motivation that's coursing through your veins.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, man. Like, you hear those things, you know, you get the motivation from hearing it, but then you also get those second thoughts in the back of your head. It's like, damn, like, it's right. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not playing, so, like, it's got to be something. Is it me? Is it, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, but then it's like, you just got to keep holding on to that faith, man. You got to keep holding on to the work, you know, and I think that, you know, now as I've grown, you know, I know we'll dive more into that, you know, once I get into San Fran. But, you know, being able to just kind of just control the things that I can control and everything like that. So yeah.
Yeah, how was San Francisco when you got there? Then what happened next?
Yeah, so I got to San Fran, and man, I had another really good camp, like balled out in camp. You know, I put in a lot of work. San Francisco actually was the year where I first. I'm sorry. So my third year, Going into my third year, I took the summer to go train with Larry, like we talked about, and that second year, that fourth year going to San Francisco, I took Larry's trainer, and I had him write me up a program, and I was like, I told myself that's how I was going to train, you know, from here on out. And so that fourth year, I hit it hard, trained hard, and it kind of gave me a breath of fresh air because I was going to somewhere different. I was going to a new building. I was going around new coaches and everything like that. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe these coaches will be able to see that, you know, I can play. You know, they'll get me out there and I can play. And, you know, I get there, had a great OTAs, same thing, great phase one, all those different things. Had a great time there. I actually stayed in I stayed in San Francisco and did the training there. While I was there, did the whole off-season training there, trained really hard, did what I was supposed to do. Body was in shape. Mind was right, everything like that. Going to camp, kill it in camp. Had a really, really good camp. It's like the same thing again, bro. Scored a touchdown in the first preseason game. Like, second game, played really, really well. Third game, played really, really well. And then I ended up starting the first game against Detroit. Scored the first touchdown of the season. And so I'm thinking in my head, like, okay, this is it. Because I done made it past preseason. You know what I'm saying? I done made it past this. So now I'm starting. And we get to Philly week. And we stay out on the West Coast. And my receiver coach, you know, he comes up to me and he tells me, he's like, man, like, you know, they don't the coaches, they don't want to. You're not starting anymore because they're wondering why an undrafted guy, the media, they want to get the media off the team's back because they want to know why an undrafted guy is playing over a first rounder. And so I'm like, bro, hey, there's no way that this is happening again. Like, there's
Who
no
tells
way
to- you this?
So Wes Welker tells me this. My receivers.
Oh, your receivers coach. Yeah.
My receivers coach in San Francisco.
Oh my God.
And so he tells me this and I know it has nothing to do, you know, with Wes. I know it wasn't him. I know he was told to come and tell me that. And so at that time I'm like, you know, I'm looking at him like what are you talking about? Like what media? What are you talking about? So they had me go talk to the media about you know, about this whole competition thing between me and the other receiver, and that, you know, how, like, basically almost kind of like copping the whole organization out, like almost kind of like downplaying like what I've done to get everybody to back off. And so
they're telling you what to say, like coaching you up on here's what you, the message.
Well, yeah, they were just basically kind of just like, you know, hey, this is what the media is saying, you know, just kind of just say, hey, no, that's not going on. You know, this is what's going on. I'm like, okay, like, all right, like, whatever. Like, I have no idea what's even going on here. So I'm just like, okay, cool. So I go talk to him. And then after that game, you know, I didn't play. I didn't play the third game. I didn't play at all on offense, played only special teams. After that happened, I kind of went back into like that hole again. I'm like, bro, like, here we go again, bro. Like, and here it is again. And so, but the thing that was different was in San Francisco, that was in, you know, in with Arizona, was that they actually allowed me, they actually utilized me and they wanted me to play, you know, for blocking and stuff like that. And then we'll kind of touch on that when we get to Miami, you know, I would go in, I would block, you know, do dirty work, stuff like that. So I was appreciative, you know, of that I was able to play. But at the same time, I still kind of had like this sour taste in the back of my mouth. Like, man, like, bro, like I won the job. Like, why? Like, what happened? Like, I didn't do anything to lose it, you know? So why did it get taken?
You won the starting job in training camp.
Won the starting job in training camp. I won a starting job. I won one of the three starting jobs.
And I'm trying to think, it's like, where there's Debo's there.
Yeah, Debo
And
was there.
Ayuk would have been the first round pick, I'm guessing.
Brandon Ayuk was there. And then I think we had Mohamed Sanu. He was there as well, too. The older guy who was there. And so I think the thing that was different about, I think, to San Francisco's credit, you know, Shanahan didn't bring me in. You know, the special teams coordinator brought me in. And so when I get brought in, I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm not Shanahan's guy. I'm not a receiver. You know what I'm saying? And so when I get there and they see that I can play receiver, they're like, oh shoot, like that's cool. Like that's what's up. Like this guy can really play receiver. Like he's not a special teams guy. Like I don't think they were really expecting that out of me. And so get there, play, you know, do what I'm supposed to do. And then it just doesn't really pan out for whatever reason. Now I will say that I did have games, you know, where I did start, I did play, I stepped in, you know, behind Debo. I think Debo missed one game. I played for him in Seattle, played there. So that was actually a better position than what I was in Arizona, because there was times where guys went down in Arizona and I was supposed to be playing and they still found a way not to play me. And so like, it had to be every man down for me to play in Arizona. Like I remember we played in Arizona the last game, my last game. Fitz went down with COVID. Kirk went down with COVID. We had another guy go down. So it was like, we ain't got a choice. Now we gotta put him out there. So I went out and then I went out that game and I had like four grabs for like 60 something yards or something like that. So like
that's
you know,
funny. I do a show with Isaiah McKenzie here in Buffalo and like it's the one chance he got at New England last season. It was the same thing. Everybody else got COVID. Yeah. That's the only reason he played, and he won in the game.
Exactly. So that's the difference between, you know, the Niners and, you know, what had happened in Arizona. You know, it's just, you know, I think it was just more so of a thing that, you know, I just wasn't, a coach's guy or whatever it may be. And, you know, they already had their guys. They already had their plan anyway. You know, I think they were kind of signing me more to be a special teams guy, you know, which is perfectly fine. And, you know, but I came in, I did what I was supposed to do, balled out. And, you know, it just didn't go the way that it was supposed to. And granted, you know, like I said, I was still able to play. Like I went from, I don't even know what percentage of snaps that I was playing in Arizona. It couldn't even have been what I was playing in San Francisco, but San Francisco, I played like 21% of offensive snaps, and which was a huge jump from, you know, from AZ. And so for that, you know, that was another positive, right? That was another positive for me to just keep on going, even though it was like, okay, something else was taken away from me, you know, opportunities were taken away from me again.
You win the job, you're a starter, and you get the ball thrown to you 20 times all season for 9 catches. Like that's if you're winning a job, that shouldn't be the case. I mean, you're a positive, optimistic guy, so I guess that's why we're sitting here talking. But
yeah, and that's what I was saying.
Most people.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. In San Francisco, like there were times that I feel like mentally, like going into games and stuff like that, like I wasn't in the right place. Like I allowed what happened to kind of take over me mentally. Like that was a time where I felt like I kind of gave in to what was going on. Cause in Arizona, I didn't really allow it to happen because I still had the special teams and everything like that. But it got to that point. It was just like, bro, like, come on, bro. Like, is this just going to keep happening? Like year after year, after year, after year. And I kind of went into a shell there. So it was like, there were times where I had opportunities and I didn't make them count, you know what I'm saying? In games and stuff like that. And so that was a big learning lesson for me, because it was like, okay, bro, like at the end of the day, like you still got to go out. You still got to go make your plays, you know, like, because no matter what's happening outside of that, you got to go make your plays. And so that's what kind of adopted, you know, the whole mindset that I have now with, you know, signing with Miami and doing, you know, being able to play in Miami. So,
yeah. Before Miami, like when you're in your hole again, what does that look like? I mean, how down were you at this point with San Francisco?
Yeah. I would honestly say, man, like, It was. I think it was actually tougher in San Francisco because I didn't have those guys. I didn't have those guys around me. Like I didn't have Fitz. I didn't have, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have Kirk. I didn't have Chase. And so it was actually.
Is your wife with you out there?
Yeah, my wife came with me. You know, when we were in California, and it was actually tough. It was actually much tougher, bro. just literally just searching for answers. I'm like, bro, like, what is going on? Like, I know that I can play. Like, just what's going on? And I just knew that, you know, like I said, just looking at positives again. Like, okay, like, all right, like, at least we're progressing. Like, we're on a new team, like, playing a little bit more offense. Like, okay, you still playing special teams? Like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, I knew there was more for me. I knew there was more for me. It was just more so just about just sticking to that faith and just continue to put the work in no matter what. Like, that next year, that going into that offseason, we stayed in California before we had actually got to go to, you know, like free agency and stuff like that. I kind of figured that I wasn't coming back. I just, you know, still working out in San Francisco and Cali, still putting the work in. I was just like, man, I just got to work. Like, no matter where else we go, like, I just got to put the work in and just be ready for, you know, for the opportunity. Because if I'm not, like, that's all I'm saying. Like, if the opportunity, I always told myself, if the opportunity doesn't present itself, it's not going to be because I'm not prepared. Like, that's something I wouldn't be able to live with. Like, I would much rather somebody tell me that, yeah, bro, we're not playing you because we want to see other people play and me win the job, as opposed to they tell me, yeah, you're not playing because you're just not good, or you wasn't prepared. Like, that's not happening. You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of like my whole mind frame. You know, that's what I just kept falling back on. It's like, you know, either you're going to be trained or you're going to be untrained, you know? So that was kind of like my whole motto.
So then, I mean, Mike McDaniel is there. He sees you. He saw something in you, right? I mean, your own coordinator and becomes a head coach in Miami. And how did that opportunity come to be? And I imagine when you go to Miami, it's like, okay, special teams, fun and all, but maybe I could be a part of things on this offense. That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and so we're in San Francisco at the time, and we're going through free agency once again. You know what I'm saying? And so we're going through free agency. And it was crazy because I felt like no team had offered for me to come to their, like, no team was in, like, negotiations. And I'm thinking in my head, like, I'm like, why? Like, I went from Arizona. I had three or four teams wanting me to come and play for them. And then, you know, I play more on offense. I make some plays, you know, on offense. You know, I show that I can play. Bunch of buzz, you know, in training camp about, you know, third receiver, all that type of stuff. So I'm pretty sure there's a team out there that's like, he can play. But lo and behold, it was only one team was interested, bro. And it was really the Raiders at the time. And so the Raiders, we're talking to the Raiders. We're about to get a deal done. And they don't get back in touch with my agent. And so the crazy part was Miami had a receiver who they were wanting to sign back. And they were saying that if they signed him back, then they obviously didn't want me. And so it was crazy because I'm like, okay, we're going to Las Vegas. We're going to the Raiders.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, cool. That's where we're going. But then I go to look at my phone and the receiver that Miami said they wanted to sign went to the Raiders. Huh. And so I'm like, okay, cool. So they reach out. My agent reached out to Miami, and they're like, you know, do you guys want training? Like, yes, absolutely. Like, we want it. So I'm like, all right, this is the best opportunity. So I go sign with Miami. I sign, and so this time around, you know, I'm kind of in my head, like, and to me, I kind of feel like God kind of gave me just one option. It was like, this is where you need to go, like. You know, I'm not going to give you no other options because this is where you need to go. And so, we get here, you know, I kind of adopt the mindset of just like, you know what, no matter what happens, like, I'm just going to continue to put one foot in front of the other. Like, because I think a lot of the times when I was training and when I was, working out for the, you know, for other, you know, with the other teams, I was attaching my emotions to results. And when the results didn't come, my emotions would go up and down like a roller coaster. And so this time, you know, going into, you know, for this team, I was like, you know what, I'm not going to attach my emotions to my results this year. Like, I'm just going to put the work in and just let the chips fall where they may. Like, just let's just go to work and that's it. So I go to work, put the work in. Had a really, really good camp again. Same thing, really great preseason, same thing. And then, like, I'm playing a lot on offense. Like, they got me involved, like, blocking, all those different things. And I'm going to rewind, actually. Get to Miami. We actually, me and my wife, we actually come and sign a contract with Miami. Looks my wife in her eyes, sits us down on the couch and tells us, like, look, like, Trent, I know what you've been through. I know what type of player you are. I know what you can do. And I'm letting you know right now that you ain't got to worry about no politics here. Like, you're going to get the chance to be able to compete and to be able to win, to compete for a job. And when he said that, I was like, okay, that's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's all I need to hear. Was just, I was just going to get a fair shot. And Mike did it. Like, he pulled on his word. I came in, I put in the work, and, you know, I was playing in the first three games, you know, as the fourth receiver, but still playing a lot, still playing like 25 to 30 snaps. You know, they had me in on blocking plays. You know, that's how I kind of, you know, made my mark on offense at first, was like just being a good, really, really good blocker. But go to the third game, I start at the number three spot, and then I just hold it all the way through. And, you know, it was just like kind of just like my year. I was like, man, look, this has got to be the year where I prepare myself, you know, to where I want to be, because this whole entire time, this is the opportunity that I've been looking for, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just so, like I told Mike, I was just so grateful that, you know, he was, you know, willing to, you know, give me what I had rightfully earned, you know? And I think it was just so fitting that, you know, I'm here in Florida. My wife ends up getting pregnant. My wife is from Orlando, 2 hours down the road. Her mom is able to come help out with the birth and everything like that. And so that's why I was like, I kind of felt like God was just like, this is where you need to be, because this is what's going to happen, you know, in the future. Like, you're going to have a baby, you know, you're going to, you know, excel in this offense as a number three and, you know, all those different things. And so, you know, up the journey up until this point has been so like bittersweet. You know, it's just like, and all through that journey, like, I've been able to grow and mature as a person, you know, be able to handle my emotions, be able to, you know, look at things differently in a different light, you know, look at the league, you know, not in a, you know, it has its negatives, but it also has its positives and everything like that. But, you know, going through everything that I went through, like, you know, I'm not salty about anything. I'm not, you know, bitter about what happened with San Fran. I'm not bitter about what happened about, you know, Arizona, because that's going through those things made me who I am today. And not going through those things, like, I wouldn't have wanted to have a baby in Arizona on the West Coast, way, way, way away from my family, or, you know, you know what I'm saying? And you got to look at those organizations now, like, they're going through new coaching hires and, you know, all those different things and stuff like that. So it's just like, you know, I just feel like God placed me like right where I needed to be at the right time, at the right moment. And so, you know, it's been a lot of fun being able to play for Mike. You know, I hope I'm able to come back. You know, that's the prayer. And like, I'm just so grateful that I've put myself and put my family in a position to be able to, you know, sign a second contract. You know, teams have already been reaching out trying to see, you know, if I want to come there, and, you know, all those different things. But just a year ago, it was just like only one team offered, you know? And so for me, it's just like, it was just all about the opportunity. And so now it's just like compounding that and just continuing just to grow off of that. So, yeah.
So it took, that would have been Mac Hollins, I want to say, right? That
went
to Vegas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So that kind of opened up that spot. And all guys want is honesty and a fair shot in the That's NFL. It. That's it. Just be upfront. Like, no games, no bullshit. We don't need the rah-rah speeches. You know, we don't need the fake tough guy routine. Just give me a fair shot. Let me win a job. Best man win. Whatever that's position.
It. Exactly.
And that's why people love Mike, right? Like, that's what he's all about.
Correct. And that's what's so cool, man. Like, and I think the whole team is like that. Like, if you can play, you're going to play. Like, you know what I'm saying? You get a guy like River Craycraft who, you know, in other situations probably wouldn't play. You know what I'm saying? Like, a guy who's – was in San Francisco, who was up and down on the roster, coming up and down, coming up and down, coming up and down, and they would cut him. And then they'll call him, you know, I remember one story he told me, he said they cut him and he was leaving. He's on the highway. And then they're like, hey, we want to sign you back. He turns back around and comes back. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you'll get guys that come here and Mike, you know, really gives them a fair shot. And, like, you know, River goes out and he has two touchdowns and, critical games where we win, and you know, you just, I'm just saying, just do right by people, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's saying that, hey, like, nobody is owed anything or deserved anything. But when you lay the ball out there, and if a guy beats a guy, if a guy wins a job, like, you give it to him. If he loses a job, then that's on him. Like, it's just all about just the opportunity. So yeah.
Yeah, I know you weren't in Miami the year before, but man, when I was down there for that Tua story, did not sound like it was the same state of affairs with Coach Brian Flores.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I've
probably heard the horror stories yourself.
That's what I've heard too. That's exactly what I've heard.
I mean, that's huge though. I know things kind of went off the rails there midseason, but you guys had injuries. I mean, God, hope Tua's okay with all his concussions. Yeah. Which it sounds like he's on the road to recovery and wants to, I guess he wants to play football, which is number one. It's up to him.
Yeah.
But you guys have a good thing cooking in Miami, man. I mean, what does it look like day to day there with what you've built? Because I think it's one of, I mean, you almost beat the Bills here, you know, 15 minutes away from my house here in a game. Yeah. Nobody gave you a shot in hell. I mean, that would have been one of the biggest upsets in playoff history. That just says a lot about the culture there in general, the fact that you're in that game overall.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, man, I would say that, man, we're building something really, really special. And that's why I say, like, I'm really hoping that, you know, that I'm able to come back. And, like, I think our window is just, like, wide open to win the Super Bowl now. I think that this year, you know, it's you know, I feel like every team has a window, you know. And I think that this team has a, you know, a wide open window to go and compete, you know, for a Super Bowl for years to come. And, you know, what we're building is special, man. Like, Tua is a great player. Like, you know, I think he's been fully cleared, if I'm not mistaken. He wants to play. You know, we've talked, you know, he's talked about, you know, having me back, wanting me to come back and everything like that. And, you know, playing with Tyreek, playing with Waddle, like, and we just have a few issues that we got to fix, you know, just like every other team does. And I think once we get those things corrected and once we're able to really establish like a dominant culture, I know the whole Vic Fangio thing. I don't even know if he's the DC or not. I've been hearing that he is. I don't know if he is. Nah, I don't know what's going on with that, but like being able to get,
he's a wizard, man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, being able to get, you know, potentially have somebody like that and have Mike on the offensive side. It's like, bro, like there's so much damage that we could do, you know, as a team. And so, I think it's an exciting time to be, you know, a Miami Dolphin. I think what was really cool about it, like, I feel like nobody was talking about Miami as far as like a team, you know, years prior. And I feel like now, like, you got to talk about the Dolphins. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we've done a really good job of flipping the organization upside down. You know what I'm saying? And turning the culture into a competing organization. And so I'm excited about it for sure.
I know. I mean, you had the big year, 417 yards, a couple touchdowns, the 75-yarder against San Francisco. It had to be pretty sweet. I didn't even ask you about that. I mean,
yeah, that was dope.
A little vengeance there.
Yeah, that was dope for sure. Absolutely.
Is there any, like, small part of you that's, like bracing for impact? Like, you're a free agent. They can flirt with other players. They've got a draft. They've got an opportunity to get all these other receivers. It's like, oh, shit, not again. Not again. Yeah. Like, you see it, guys. You see it. You know what I can do.
Yeah. Right. I think a little part of me does. And especially in this time frame, man, like it's been a little bit of worrisome, but I think, you know, having
with a baby son, on top of it, right? Like it changes everything.
Yeah. Exactly. I think having my son, and I think, you know, trusting in the fact that Mike stood on his word from the beginning of the season, I think that, you know, I would like to think that, you know, he would want me back. But I know, I also know too, that business is business, you know? And I think for me, the main objective is that I was able to put myself in position to be able to go somewhere and contribute on offense. And that's it. I think for me, the whole thing that I've just been, you know, praying for and asking for is just to continue just for the opportunity, because I know now, okay, we already know what I can do with the opportunity. So now it's like, let's just keep on, you know, keep praying for that. Let's keep working for that. And, you know, whatever team, you know, does get me, they know what they're going to get. You know, you see the tape, you see the film. But I would love more than nothing but to do it here, you know, with the guys that are on this team. You know, Tua is a great individual. Everybody on the team, man, is just just great guys. Like this place feels like home to me. You know, like, you know, it feels like, you know, all those other teams that I was on, like, it just none of the you know, the organizations, you know, compared to this type of feel, you know, to being around the guys that we have, and you know, just, you know, the type of staff that is around the building and coaching staff and everything like that. And so this feels like home, but you know, it definitely does. It is a little bit worrisome, you know, to kind of see what's going to happen, but we'll see. I think the main thing is that now that the tape is out there, and that's always been the goal for people to see, and people to realize, okay, like, yeah, he plays special teams, but no, he definitely can play receiver because it's right here on tape. You know, I feel like other years that, you know, it wasn't on tape, so you couldn't really see it. Yeah, I had all the practice tape, but nobody's watching that. You know what I'm saying? People want to see real game tape. And so it's like, now you can't say that I can't play receiver. You can't say that now, you know. So that's the good thing about it.
I mean, talk about, you know, the proof's in pudding. Like, they signed a receiver to a 3-year, $22 million contract, Cedric Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he's a very, very good receiver. We saw it in Dallas. There's a reason they gave him all that money. But Mike was true to his word right there.
Absolutely.
There it is. You're not making no 22 mil over 3 years. Like, it'd be so easy for any coach, any GM to do exactly what Arizona did, right? We drafted these guys, or we signed these guys. They're going to play. Screw this undrafted, you know, dude from nowhere, Illinois.
Right. We're not, exactly. From,
you know, via Vanderbilt. Yeah. I think that's, and I got the same feel out there in Miami. It just is such a good atmosphere. You just get the sense that this team's set up to win for a long time. And
absolutely. Yeah.
It'd be a great spot to be. I mean, just finally, and I can't thank you enough for hanging out this long. Jeez, with a baby. How is life as a dad? Like,
it's good, man. I love it, man. It's a lot of fun, bro. I think it's definitely been, I think it's taking a lot of thoughts of, you know, free agency and everything like that off of me. You know, all those things have taken away, you know, all the worrisome and all that stuff. And so it's been good to, you know, just hang out with him and, you know, spend time with him and, you know, just kind of reflect on the dad that I want to be and, you know, be the man, you know, what I want to be for my son and everything like that. So it's been a lot That's of fun.
Awesome.
Excited. I'm really over the whole baby phase. I'm excited. I'm over the newborn phase. Because I'm tired of not sleeping, and I'm tired of him crying all the time, because I really want him to just be older and play. I want to play with him, but then...
Do you sleep at all?
Yeah, no, he's not sleeping that much. He sleeps a little bit during the day, so his circadian rhythm is obviously off. So, like, his daytime is, you know, his nighttime, so he sleep all through the day, then his nighttime is the daytime. Like, yesterday, bro, he was up from, like, 2 to 5, just wide awake. Like, literally just wide awake, so... but the good thing is he's not that much of a crier. Like, he'll just be wide awake. He won't, you know, he'll just look at you. He won't cry or anything.
Oh, that's
so it's not,
silver lining.
It's not that bad. But we got to try to figure out how to get this creative rhythm, you know, in place for sure.
Maybe, right? Are you into a show? Like, what do you do from 2 to 5
so a.m.? I've been Survivor has been my show. I've been watching Survivor. I've been watching.
That's fitting for you.
I've been watching a lot of Survivor, so that's been dope. And I'm also like a big movie guy too, so like I watch a lot of movies. But I think it's good though, bro, because it's like I don't have to be up, I don't have to be anywhere. So it's like, that's the good thing about it. Like, I don't have to be up and go to work, and I don't know how guys do it like during the season.
I mean,
like,
if you're gonna lose a playoff game, this isn't a bad time with a newborn. Can you imagine if you're like about to play in the Super Bowl right now?
Exactly, bro. Like, that'd be so wild. So. So yeah, it's been dope, bro. So now we in the process. We about to start packing up the houses right now. We're renting, and then we're gonna probably go to an Airbnb for a couple of months and just wait it out in free agency. If we come back here, we're gonna buy a house, stay here. And then wherever we go, if we go somewhere else, we'll figure it out.
That's you say it so casually, like that'd be so stressful.
I feel like right now it's exciting times, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right, it's exciting.
Yeah, so because, you know, it'd be different, you know, if we didn't have the resume attached to it, you know. So yeah, I'm excited, man.
Well, what's next for Trent Sherfield then? The goon. I don't know. Maybe there's another nickname I didn't hear.
Yeah, no, that's fine too. That's fine.
I like it. And what's next for you then? Because everybody's been counting you out. So you know you better than anybody.
Yeah, I think for me, honestly, man, I'm honestly really just scratching the surface. I think that, you know, what I've showed this past season is not even close to what I'm going to do in this league. You know, I'm continue just to stay, you know, continue to work hard, continue to just do the things that I've always stuck to, stick true to who I am, you know, stick true to my faith, continue to, you know, believe in myself. Now it's about being the best dad that I can possibly be for my son. You know, create generational wealth for my family and, you know, just continue to make these plays. And, like I said, I truly believe I've had a lot of time to really just kind of think about, you know, my career, you know, how it's going and, you know, just my overall thing, what I've been through and everything like that. And, you know, to finally get the opportunity to go out and play and make plays has been really dope. But I think that, you know, there's way more out there for me to go get. And I'm excited. I'm really excited. I feel my work ethic kind of going to another level. You know, I thought it would get to a point where you've kind of capped out, but it's like, nah, like there's more to go get. And there's a lot more people are going to go see, a lot more people will see for sure.
I mean, you mentioned all these other people like your grandmother, Larry Fitzgerald, like the coach in college. Now it's your son that's going to like just tap into that beast within and push you that's like the greatest motivator anybody could ask for is when you're holding a baby in the middle of the night and you're an NFL player and you've got a chance to, like you said, create generational wealth, give him something to look up to.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine that being a motivator, how big that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm excited for it, man. I think about it all the time and I just know the work is always the proof, you know. It's held up this long for me, you know, even going through all the trials and tribulations that I've been through. And, you know, for me, the formula that I use, it works, you know, and that's God, work, and that's family. And that's what I stick to. And I know that for sure that, you know, whether, you know, prayerfully it's in Miami or if it's somewhere else, like I'm always going to be me no matter where I'm at.